Fashion.
Turn to the left.
Fashion.
Turn to the right.
Fashion.
Fashion.
You're listening to Fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
Good morning, Penelope Noir. Come in.
Morena, how are you?
Yeah, good, good. Now this morning, we're talking about farmers.
Yeah, I thought I'd check that out after talking about Smith & Coe's last week.
Yes.
And because I don't know if you've ever watched America's Next Top Model or ever did watch that, they always talked about commercial models and editorial models, and the commercial models are ones that kind of feature in catalogues for stores like Farmers. So I imagine that Farmers, in its like lifespan, has spent quite a lot on advertising with commercial models. So I wanted to kind of check it out and find out its history.
Okay.
And it's got some quite fascinating kind of factoids. Like at one point, there are 59 stores now, but at one point, going to Farmers once a week was kind of part of the New Zealand way of life. By 1960, one in 10 people in New Zealand had an account with Farmers. You could at one point buy houses from Farmers, and their saddle factory actually supplied the armed forces, which I thought was quite fascinating. So it was started by a Scottish immigrant called Robert Laidlaw in 1909, and he started it with £240, which is about 51,000 now, just over that. And he called the company Laidlaw Leeds, and Leeds, he didn't kind of have a partner called Leeds, but he just added that so he could have the motto Laidlaw Leeds, others follow. And it started as a catalogue mail order business, and the catalogue was about 500 pages long, so it was quite massive. And women didn't feature until the 1920s, but it kind of included absolutely everything, specifically around kind of farming, you know, rural area. It was sent out to rural areas, and it did kind of focus on the wife, although it was always sent to the husband because the wives were looking after the households. And in 1917, Laidlaw Leeds was approached by another mail order company called the Farmers Union Trading Company, and they merged, and Laidlaw became the managing director and held the most shares, and that's how Farmers was born.
How long before they established the brick and mortar?
So he had a rented store in 1914, but it was burnt down. So he began construction on land he'd purchased on Hobson Street. And so the store opened in 1921 as a retail store. Before that, it was kind of a warehouse for the mail order company. And when the store opened, it had 7 stories, 5 acres of floor space, tea rooms, and a rooftop playground, which many people might remember.
Is that the one that was there until like the 90s or something?
Yeah, it closed in 1991, and it had this rooftop playground that your parents kind of used to either stick you up there while they went shopping, or they would just hang out and have, like, you know, a cup of tea or coffee, and you'd just run around. I think I've only got vague memories of it, but I feel like it kind of had this little racetrack, and you had push cars that you went round in, and I think there was a giant mushroom. That's kind of my memory of it.
Yes.
Very, very vague memory, but I know that I spent a lot of time there.
Is the building still there? Does it have the Irish pub on the corner now? Is that the building?
Yeah, so the building, reopened in 1998 as the Heritage Hotel.
Ah, yep, okay, yep.
And I think you can actually, like, you can purchase apartments in it, but it's also a hotel. But interestingly, Robert Laidlaw was a teetotaler, and he at one point bought the pub next door and turned them into offices because he didn't believe in drinking.
Yes.
Yeah, he also, in 1922, created the free bus service from Karanga Happy Road to Hobson Street because of the fact that, you know, it was Hobson Street was actually quite far away from Queen Street, well, considered far away from Queen Street and Karanga Happy Road. So that used to travel up and down, like, in a circuit. And then it became, in 1938, it became the free electric trolley bus. I don't know if you remember those, and they had those big kind of antennae thing that went on wires. I think Wellington had them for a long time. In 1930, the 300-seat main tea room opened for Farmer's 21st birthday, and it opened for lunch and also Friday dinner, where fish and chips were 80 cents. 1934, the first Christmas parade happened, because, you know, it was always known as the Farmer's Christmas Parade.
Yes, it still is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. In 1936, Hector, an Australian sulphur-crested cockatoo, was adopted. And it could talk, and it was said to be 90 years old at that point, and it died in 1977, and it was 131 years old, and apparently it's stuffed and still sitting in the head office. crazy, yeah. But I think a lot of people remember Hector, but I don't. Like, I've just heard about him.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they also were the first, they also had the first escalators in Auckland. And in 1955, they were opened by the mayor, J.H. Luxford, and he travelled up the escalators with Hector the parrot. And 1960 is when the 79-foot centre was added to
the iconic centre. Storage somewhere now? Or did someone buy him? Has he been resurrected?
No, it goes on, it goes on the, like, what's now Farmers, but it was the Whitcliffe building for a while.
Yep, yeah.
The reindeer were added the next year. And then in 1990, Farmers donated all the costumes and floats to a charitable trust as the Auckland Santa Parade. And yeah, as I said, 1991, Hobson Street store closes for good. And that was because of the malls, you know, all around the country, there were farmers in all the malls and people just didn't travel to town anymore.
Yes.
And they, you know, they'd become the largest chain in 1970 when they'd acquired another store in the South Island, another kind of department store chain called Calder Mackay. And they also had various owners after Robert Laidlaw. Like, they were owned by Chase Corporation in 1986, but they, I think they crashed with the 1987 crash. And then Decker bought them out, and they faced competition with the warehouse in 1990. And so they were kind of like owned by a few different companies, but then a family company, Ann Norman and her family, bought it under the name James Pascoe, which is the Pascoe Jewelers. And so I believe they've owned it since then.
Man, it's such a, I don't know, a varied history. And also, I mean, it must be so tough having so many product lines and, you know, always just being in a market which is continually changing for a business like Farmers.
Yeah, for sure. And it's quite interesting because they managed to position themselves between kind of like the warehouse and Smith and Coe's and Ballantyne's and stuff, but they were Farmers were nationwide, whereas Ballantyne's and Smith and Coe's weren't. And, you know, now that Smith and Coe's and those other high-end stores are kind of like either smaller or, you know, not as prominent or gone, Farmers is kind of like almost picked up again. And I think you can notice that when you go into stores, you can see that like a lot of the brands seem to be a little bit more high-end.
Yes.
And they definitely have higher-end makeup and that sort of thing. They don't do, at one point they did computers and that sort of thing and electronics, and they don't do those anymore. So they've kind of streamlined, knowing that there's other competitors. So I guess they've obviously been quite clever in that.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting. There was a guy called Ian Hunter, or there is a guy called Ian Hunter, who's a business historian. He wrote and released a book about Farmers in 2009 when Farmers were celebrating its centenary. And also there's quite an interesting kind of, I think it might be a thesis or it's definitely an essay on the actual Farmers catalogue, which is quite fascinating, and talking about whereabouts like women feature and how it was kind of like Robert was, as I said earlier, you know, they were sent to the husbands, but he was saying to them, but make sure your wives read these because we know that they're going to deck the house out and, you know, clothe the children sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Man, yeah. I mean, I kind of think of Farmers as a bit of a place that you go and get staples like socks and undies. But
yeah,
as far as like actual fashion and trending stuff, are they like pretty at sitting at the fore as far as what they carry each season?
I guess it's kind of like that. It's kind of a higher tier than, say, like what is considered like high street, like as in Glassons and those sorts of things. And I think it's good for people who work in offices. I think it's quite conservative and a safe kind of fashion.
Yes.
And it's that mid-tier pricing. So some people would consider it quite expensive, but it's nowhere, you know, it's not like Smith & Coe's, who held those higher-end kind of Karen Walkers and things like that. They tend to have Whistles, which is a UK label, I believe. And, yeah, just kind of, I feel like it's quite conservative because it's operating in kind of that, I don't want to say middle class, but that middle kind of New Zealand kind of space. Yeah.
Someone has texted through saying lots of big toadstools, push cars, and a cockatoo in the cage. They're saying, yeah. I'm 63 and have many memories of Hector and the playground.
Yeah, I would have loved to have, like, seen Hector. I should, like, Google and see if there's any photos of him. But it sounds like he was pretty amazing. But I do remember the push cars and how much fun it was, you know.
Excellent. Hey,
probably couldn't do that now because it would be, like, a risk to children getting hurt, I guess.
Who knows? All right, hey, Penelope Noir, thank you so much for fashion this morning. We'll check in with you next week.
Thanks, Gunny.
Okay, bye.
That was fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
We are the Goon Squad and we're coming to town. Beep, beep.
Beep, beep.